Okay. We're in week three. The numbering is just a little confusing. We're in unit two of the study program, but we're in week three of the program. I'm going to assume that doesn't confuse anybody, and that we can straighten it out offline if it needs to be straightened out. Yes, and because we're taking two weeks for each unit, that's the underlying reason. So I assume it will all be very clear to you as we go along. I did do an orientation last week, and mostly, as I said, I'm going to be using these orientations maybe to make bridges. I mean, that's how I've always used the orientations, the bridge between the previous week's session and this one, but also in particular go over things that I didn't get to in the phone call, basically. I call your attention, those of you on computer, to Kathleen's message about muting you and unmuting you and so on. Sudhi has a question about the orientation. Well, let's start with that. I'm a flexible guy. Yes. Right. Right. Well, what happened when you tried to do it? Okay, so you're making an interesting point, which is that all of our experience, in a sense, is inner experience. That would require quite a bit of discussion to really lay that out. But basically, you know, there's certainly a sense in which you can say that, and yet that inner experience gets assigned to locations in space. So that's a very interesting question to explore, and I encourage you to continue to look at it. But I don't understand how it relates to the question of rigor or precision in doing the exercise. What are you supposed to do? Okay. Well, so we could take the question that you've been exploring as an example of that. But let me just say it in a simple way. You know, I'm hoping that this is of value to other people, because I did ask everybody to do exercise 24 without letting go of rigor and precision. So this should be something you all explored. So a very simple way of saying it is don't fall asleep. Okay. In other words, you know, you have this direct experience, and maybe it feels very delicious, and you kind of bathe in that deliciousness, and you are no longer really doing inquiry. In order to do inquiry, in a sense, there needs to be rigor and precision. And this goes back to something that I also talked about in the orientation, which grew out of a comment that Michael made during the phone call last week, when he said that you know, he was surprised, or he didn't quite say that, but this is what I'm saying. He was surprised that there was such a focus on inquiry because he had thought that there was a lot of room and a lot of importance to be placed on appreciation and gratitude and other modes of engaging experience. And my response to that, and the question really helped clarify that, or the comment helped clarify that, my response was that appreciation and gratitude are also forms of inquiry. And if you ask, well, is there such a thing as appreciation that is inquiry and appreciation that's not inquiry? What's the difference? The difference is rigor and precision. The difference is a kind of a willingness to investigate. So if you are flooded with feelings of appreciation, there is still the possibility of investigating what that means. And your example of looking into the nature of external experience and how that relates to the fact that it seems to be internal in some sense, that's a good example. You know, if you're asking, you know, questions arise naturally, or wonder arises naturally. In the reading, it's a great question, and that's why I'm going on. In the reading from Love of Knowledge, there is a phrase that struck me in relation to something else I'm doing, but still it struck me. Rinpoche says his own inquiry was guided by wonder. And I think that's a beautiful phrase. Being guided by wonder has to do with rigor and precision. We may think that it doesn't, because we have a certain understanding of what counts as rigor and precision, which involves being distanced from our experience, you know, taking an objective view, a scientific view, what's sometimes called a third-person view. That is too limited an understanding, I think, from a TSK point of view. You know, if you look at the books, the TSK books, what you see on display there is a tremendous rigor and precision, but it's not scientific in the usual sense of, you know, let's get out our measuring equipment and see what's going on. So, good to talk about that. So Bruce comments on this. So I think this is already, you know, we've just talked about that. So thank you, Bruce, for affirming that. Bruce writes, rigor and precision in the exercise for me was proportional to my curiosity and appreciation. And that's exactly right. So curiosity is a word that can kind of go in a couple of different directions. Sometimes it seems like it's a little bit superficial, but I'm sure that's not what you're saying. It's being interested. You know, you're absolutely interested in what's going on, and you're not satisfied with the experience. Or, you know, I don't mean you're dissatisfied, but let's say you have an experience in doing Marriage of Sound and Breath, and it feels very relaxed. That's great, but it's not the end of the process. It's not the inquiry part. You know, that's the curiosity or the interest in seeing what is going on here. So it's kind of a subtle balance, but it's really, really important. And, you know, there is a sense, I mean, maybe we wouldn't want to use the words rigor and precision. Maybe we could instead talk about being guided by wonder, or maybe our experience is in between those two. That really has to do with the heart of TSK, because TSK is about activating knowledge. That's the theme for our whole program, and it's about active inquiry. This is also the theme of these units, these first few units that we're going through now, and that's why if you investigate if you're studying TSK, it shows up in your daily life. It absolutely shows up in your daily life. And everything takes on this quality of appreciation, curiosity, inquiry, wonder, and rigor and precision. Okay? So, so here's Caroline commenting on this. I found reading the exercise instructions aloud several times. So this is the exercise 24, I suppose, from the TSK book. Reading the exercise instructions aloud several times helped to sharpen the precision. I also needed to refresh my attention repeatedly during the practice. Yes, yes. Well, of course, anybody who does meditation knows that this process of refreshing attention repeatedly is sort of typical of any kind of meditative practice. And this marriage of sound and breath is a meditative practice in the sense that, not in the sense of being a formal meditation like you might find in the Buddhist tradition or at the Nyingma Institute. It's meditative in the sense that you are asked to slow down your experience, to appreciate your experience. Appreciation is really a great word there. And that appreciation goes with rigor and inquiry. So yes, we're in a fortunate circumstance when we do an exercise like this that we have the instructions, and the instructions, or let's just take it as a working hypothesis, look for yourself, see for yourself, but you can assume that the instructions are created, are written with rigor and appreciation. Rigor and precision. With rigor and precision, and with a keen awareness of the possibility for appreciation and inquiry and curiosity. Okay, well, that's really good. I'm very glad that question got raised, and this is exactly the kind of discussion. I hope partly this kind of discussion goes on the website, on the discussion board, but it's also completely appropriate and valuable for us to be looking at. Pretty much guarantees that there'll be certain things we don't get to today that I was thinking we might like to get to, but that's all right. That's what the orientations are for. You can't get to. I have this, it's kind of a greediness on my part, I suppose. I would always like to get to encompass in our discussions everything that comes up in these readings, but they're so rich that you can't possibly do it. So that's okay. Letting go of that is part of my practice. And something parallel may be the case for you. Not letting go of feeling the need to understand everything you read might be a parallel to that. Not to say that I understand everything I read in TSK. I wouldn't want you to think that. But I do appreciate everything I read. And I like to think, and this is part of my practice, that I am trying to engage the TSK readings and practices with rigor and precision. So enough of that. So let's go to the basic theme for today. There is a sentence in When It Rains that we talked about last week or possibly the week before that is really valuable in understanding what this kind of appreciative inquiry is all about. So we talked about it before. I'm just going to quote it now. Looking at your ordinary experience in light of the possibility that it might all happen very differently. So if you're looking at your experience in light of that, I think it's fair to say that's inherently interesting. So how could it happen? How could it happen differently? What do you find if you do a practice like Marriage of Sound and Breath? How could it happen differently this time, last time, or this time, next time? How could it be different from last time? Okay, so everything might happen very differently. That's the basic idea. The theme that I want to look at is, and that we're kind of investigating today in general, is the theme of a knowledge that is not owned by the self. So in When It Rains, there's some discussion, or there's a quote on page 24 of When It Rains that talks about turning away from a personal actor at the center of experience. Turning away from a personal actor at the center of experience. So it's not only a personal actor, it's also a personal knower. Right? And so Unit 2 announces at the very beginning that that's what it wants to look at, and that's what we want to look at. So let's just look at the first paragraph of Unit 2. It says, the previous unit suggested the TSK vision is not psychological in its orientation, and we're going to look into that in a moment. Instead, it questions the psychology of the self at a deep level, turning away from a personal actor at the center of experience. This unit explores that turn. So when we apply that to knowledge, we're turning away from a knower as the one who knows experience. And when it says here, you know, we're going to question the psychology of the self at a deep level, it's interesting to think about that a little bit. It's not saying, you know, that you're being asked to question your own psychological characteristics or your own story about your own psychology or anything like that. It's saying that we want to question the psychology, the whole notion that there is a self that has this personal psychology, not question that that's true, because it is true in our ordinary experience. That's how we approach things. But question the significance of it, question the ultimate validity of it, question whether that's the final word, and turning away from the self at the center of experience and turning away from knowledge that's owned by the self, that's the way of questioning. So I want to anticipate, before I go a little further into When It Rains, and then we'll see if we can, I want to do a practice, and then we'll see how far we can get with the love of knowledge material. But I want to just say something that might be on people's minds. We are in these first several units, in fact, in this whole six-week session, we are working with the idea of inquiry. We will be in the next unit beginning to explore time and space and knowledge, but just in a very introductory way. What we're doing in this unit is looking at this possibility of knowledge, the ownership of knowledge. That's the title of the unit. And so you might wonder how that relates to time and space. And of course, we're going to spend, you could say, the rest of this course looking at that question. But I want to anticipate a little bit and talk about some things that aren't talked about here, just briefly. Our ordinary understanding of time, there's actually, you could say, three levels. So the first level is a kind of a scientific understanding of time, time and space. That has been set in place. You know, people usually talk about it as a Newtonian. And if they talk about these things, they talk about it as a Newtonian understanding. Time and space are both absolutely real. They're completely independent from the beings or objects in time or space. If you took out all the sentient beings and took out all the objects, you'd still have time and space. That's the Newtonian version. That's something that's pretty unique to our culture, it seems to me, at least the particular form that it takes, and maybe somebody could come up with another example. But that's the aspect in our culture And for us, it's just kind of a confusion. I mean, to think of time that way and space that way, it's natural. We have to work with it, but it really isn't true to our experience. And that's what I mean by saying that it's a confusion. What's true to our experience is that the self is at the center. So that's our ordinary understanding of time and space. So not our scientific understanding, you know, when we try to be precise and use our education and talk about what time and space is. No, just when we look at our natural attitude toward our own lives, we have a certain approach toward time and space. And that approach, I'm going to characterize it just very briefly here, is that time has to do with the way we act and the way we understand reality. So we act into the future and we act based on the past, the way we describe the past to ourselves. And we do that from where we are right here in the present. And that all sounds very obvious. But it's only one understanding. It's the self's understanding. When the self is at the center of experience, when the self is the actor at the center and the knower at the center, that's the way time and space look. And that's what we want to get away from. I mentioned time and I forgot to mention anything about space, so I'll just complete that. Space is, you know, our ordinary sense of space has to do with the objects that we're interested in for whatever reason and the distance that separates us from those objects. That's how our ordinary understanding of space comes into play. At least that's the way that I'm summarizing TSK, let's say. So we'll be exploring that much more. But the reason I'm pointing that out is because when we're looking at the ownership of knowledge and the self as the owner of knowledge, the moment that we see the self as the owner, we're committed to a particular understanding of space and time. And so that's why it's very helpful to get clear on this way of seeing with the one that puts the self at the center and to see if we can question it. So how do we question it? So I want to stay with When It Rains for a bit longer and look at this very long quote on pages 24 and 25 from Love of Knowledge, not from the section that we read for today, but from the section that we read in Unit 1. I think it was assigned in Unit 1, I'm not positive. It is in the book, it is, in When It Rains, it is. So he talks about balance. He says, so one way, I'm quoting now, one way to investigate the human significance of time, so let me emphasize that the way it does in the reading, the human significance of time, space, and knowledge is through an inquiry into balance. And then he talks about what it would mean to move toward greater balance. He says we can do that on the psychological level, the physical level, or in the way we relate to our circumstances. And we can restore balance by investigating what it would mean to open space and energize time and make knowledge more available. That's one way of thinking about balance. So what I want to focus on is the next paragraph, because he goes on to say that's valuable and it's something that happens in TSK, but there's another way of engaging or of working toward balance. And the difference between those two ways of balance or those two understandings of balance is really important. And I see that Tsuti has a comment that touches on this, and we'll look at it in a moment. But let's go ahead and look at this second paragraph. It's on the top of page 25. He says, from within the TSK vision, this view of balance we just looked at, is only a first-level approximation of the true potential for balance. The language we use inevitably directs us toward the individual actor. So that's what we're wanting to call into question here. Inevitably directs us toward the individual actor at the center of any experience. But the balance attained by the actor self is a personalized version of the interplay among space, time, and knowledge. The self singles out as its possessions emotions, self-image, attachments, relationships, and a sense of personal freedom. And doing that, that singling out, sets in motion a momentum that heads at once toward imbalance. And then he goes on to say in the next paragraph that the kind of inquiry that we're putting into place here counteracts that tendency toward singling out because there are no positions and no possessions. We are, whatever we commit ourselves to, we're able to question or inquire into that commitment. That is, what can I say about that? That really helps to point, I think, toward what is special about the TSK form of inquiry, and you could say the TSK vision. The knowledge that we want to arrive at with TSK is not our knowledge, which makes it hard to point to, right? Because we don't have any way of pointing towards something that we don't own. It's not our knowledge. The time that we want to activate is not the time that is meaningful for the self. The space that we want to engage is not the space that the self inhabits. So if you think about balance, you know, many of you are familiar with Rinpoche's book, Gesture of Balance. And I think Gesture of Balance involves both these kinds of balance, the personal psychological balance, which can also be physical balance. And you can think about Kunye here too. And then this other deeper sense of balance, which Gesture of Balance doesn't talk about in terms of time and space and knowledge. But I think it's pointing toward the possibility of a balance that has nothing to do with the self. And that distinction is really important. That's why I've taken some time to spell it out. So Sudhi writes in the chat box, Rinpoche says he has never forgotten the first time that he noticed that TSK was doing him and not the other way around. Since I read that, I've been noticing that in more moments I feel that I'm a medium of TSK too and guided by it. And this is a huge and yet subtle shift from my ordinary way of operating. So yes, that's a very nice way of formulating it. And this is a theme that Rinpoche returns to repeatedly in the TSK books. And it's just another expression of this notion that the knowledge of the self, the time of the self, the space of the self are one possible personalized version, as he says, are a first level approximation of what our experience could be. So it's how we've been experiencing our whole lives, you could say. But it's just one possibility, and it's just an approximation. So Michael is asking about that in the chat box again. A narrow focus, such as the concerns of the self, entails imbalance? Does a narrow focus, such as the concerns of the self, entail imbalance? Because we thereby attempt to live in a greater whole through stressing one small part viewed in a partial way. Yeah, I think that's a good formulation. The self has singles out. That's the phrase that's in this paragraph we just looked at. The self singles out experience, and that is a narrowing down. And in Love of Knowledge, and I'm sure we'll read this later in the course, but it may not be for a while, Rinpoche talks about a single-minded way of knowing. Same thing. It's a narrow focus. We and you could say. you know, these are terms that Rinpoche uses in TSK a lot, the idea of a particular focal setting on experience. And the focal setting that we use is the focal setting of the self. And it throws us out of balance because it means we can't really be open to the whole. So when Sudhi says that, you know, she's been having more moments where she feels that she's a medium of time and space and knowledge, that you know, the time and space and knowledge are at the center, that leads toward a less narrow focus. And as Sudhi writes, it's a huge shift, but it's a subtle shift. It's not one that's easy to put into words. One of the nice things about the TSK vision is that it gives us some words to help point toward that very subtle shift. Okay. So I want to lead us toward a little bit of practice here, and that'll probably take up just about the rest of our time. We'll see. The question is, how could you bring yourself into balance? And balance would have to do with not adopting positions. And you'll notice that in the last paragraph of this quote, this long quote on page 25, Rinpoche writes about the self tending to adopt a position, and it describes that position as being free from positions. That's an interesting distinction. We don't have to really focus on that right now. The point, though, would be, how could you arrive at a place, let's say, that is before positioning? And that comes up on page 27, I think. This is the lead-in, and then I want to use another description to take us into a short practice. The lead-in here is the first full paragraph on page 27 talks about our tendency to always turn any kind of knowledge into a position, into something that the self knows. And there's a quote here from Knowledge of Freedom about that. You know, as we read, and when we're reading TSK, are we turning it into something, oh, now I understand this, or maybe now I don't understand this, or now I'm confused. But it's always the I, you know, it's always the self taking a position. And that's a kind of a contradiction. It blocks off the possibility of doing real inquiry, which is what the books are inviting us to do, which is what the vision is inviting us to do. And then he says, the TSK, so this first full paragraph on page 27, the TSK vision recognizes this contradiction and offers a way to resolve it. Its approach is to go to the deepest levels of our experience, before ideas, before ownership, before the patterns of mind. So we want to go to a deeper level of experience. The word experience we've talked about before. It's not perfect, but we pretty much have to use it. So we want to go to the deepest level of our experience. And what does it mean to say deepest level? Well, it's before ideas, it's before ownership, it's before the patterns of mind come into operation. How do we get there? That's the question. So he's saying the whole vision is a way, you know, that gives us a way of going to that level, going to a before. Now let's just say quickly that the before here doesn't mean a before that turns into another position. You know? That's something we need to think about. It's a before that is a no position before. So there's a note here from Philip in the chat box. He writes, I have this experience that we're talking about now. I have this experience very strongly when improvising music especially when in a group improvisation. And I think that's a wonderful observation. And you know, any of you who are musicians, I'm guessing, have a sense of that. And if you're not musicians, you probably have some experience where you let go of the narrow perspective, the focal setting, the ownership quality of the self. And improvisation is exactly about that. That's my sense of it. So maybe it comes up in music, maybe it comes up in acting, and maybe it comes up in writing. Maybe, you know, there's so many ways. But art, for in our culture, art is a way of doing that. Maybe it comes up in religious practice of some kind. And Philip adds that any fixed position kills the quality of the music. Yeah, exactly. So when we talk about improvisation, or when in improvisation, in theater improvisation, which I know just a tiny bit about, they always say that the heart of improvisation is the phrase, yes, and. That was interesting. Okay. Yes, and. Let me go on with that. In that yes, and, the yes is the accepting and the and is building on it and not taking a position with respect to. So I'm going to leave it kind of at that. And Brigitte is adding to this. Brigitte is a visual artist, and she says all forms of art need this as a prerequisite to evolve. And there's absolutely, I think art is a wonderful way into this. You know, we are not yet too much generating TSK art, although I think some of the things that people have done and they're aiming to do in the past and in the future are moving in that direction, and it may be that art is a way to do that. You could say that the TSK books are themselves an art form in this specific sense, that they have this wonderful no position before. You know, they all come out of a before any position. Okay, well, let's go ahead and do this practice, and we won't do it for long. I won't even let you have too much time for comment, because there's one more thing I want to do, which is introduce a practice for the week. But let's go ahead. What I was thinking of having us experiment with is something that I probably could have taken from many different places, but it's in the reading for this week. That would have been, you know, if we were doing all the readings in the When It Rains book, this is assigned. It's not assigned as part of the program. But it's valuable. It's from Sacred Dimensions, and it's on page, Roman numeral page 17. And it's in a very beautiful, evocative section that talks about opening the TSK vision. And it's just this simple point. He says, the deep tranquility of space can calm our bodies and suffuse our minds. Attuned to space, we see that we are linked to all appearance. The gift of this gentle intimacy allows knowledge to arise effortlessly. I'll stop the quote there. It's just tuning in to the deep tranquility of space, which links us to all experience. And so my suggestion is that would be a way to explore this possibility of a deeper balance, right? A balance in which time and space and knowledge come into balance, also to see what it's like to go to a place before any positioning. I see that Ron has posted something in the chat box, but let's go ahead and do this practice he's making an observation about art, so maybe we can come back to that. But let's go ahead and do the practice, because time, linear time, is moving right along. So that's the practice. It's just simply to tune in to the deep tranquility of space which links us to all appearance. Let's just take a minute or two with that. Okay? Okay, it's not very much time, but perhaps you had a sense, and perhaps you could share that. Anybody who would like to share any of their experience or ask any questions, that's fine. And I think what I'm going to do, although I did want to introduce another practice, and it would be the kind of sitting down practice for this week, I'm going to do that in the orientation materials, in other words, in what I post after this phone call, because it would take too long. I can't really do it now. So the deep tranquility of space which links us with all appearance. Let me start off with Ron's comment from before the time we did this. He says, I'm going to paraphrase. The problem with art is the same as the problem with meditation, is that when we're not doing art, and we're not doing meditation, we just fall back into our old patterns. We make something, we carve out a space where there's freedom from positions, but the rest of the time we're still deeply positioned. Yeah, that's certainly an issue, and that's exactly what I think TSK is suggesting, is moving away from, or is moving beyond, perhaps you could say. So this exercise is a great example, because the deep tranquility of space is available everywhere. And let me actually suggest something to you, which is that, my suggestion is that you practice with that notion of touching the deep tranquility of space, that you practice with that during the week as a walking around practice. So I'm kind of distinguishing right now walking around practices from sitting down practices. So here's a walking around practice. And it's the deep, being tuned in to the deep tranquility of space that links us to all appearance. And my suggestion is that you could try also integrating that. Once you if you have some sense of that, try expanding it or condensing it the way we've worked with expanding and condensing before. So let's take a look at a couple of comments in the chat box. David says, I release all I'm holding with each exhale. So holding is in conflict, you could say, seems like, or at least on a certain level, is in conflict with the deep tranquility of space. I release all I'm holding with each exhale. Space expands, a deep calm permeates. Objects of thought trickle down. I like that phrase. Objects of thought trickle down. So there's something more fundamental, which is the deep tranquility of space. Of course, we're investigating that with rigor and precision, as we know. So space expands, writes David. Objects of thought trickle down. Space expands. And Brigitte writes, space like an infinite benevolent container. An infinite benevolent container. So I like the word benevolent there. I like the word infinite. I'm not so thrilled by the word container, but, you know, that's how we think about space. Maybe there are other ways to think about it. But I like infinite and benevolent. And if you can think about a container as being infinitely benevolent or infinite and benevolent, then that's great. You can work with that. Benevolence is a little surprising. And so I hope you appreciate the surprising quality of that. You know, why would the deep tranquility of space, how would that lead to benevolence? An interesting question. Okay, Bruce writes, every object is the breathe or the breath, and it's a play on words that's typographic here, the breath or the breathing of space. The breath or the breathing of space. So that relates to what I said earlier. You know, we in this culture, our first understanding of what space and time are about is this scientific, objective, Newtonian understanding. And in that understanding, it would make no sense at all to talk about space breathing. And then in our everyday understanding, there might be a little room for that possibility. But in the understanding that we're looking at, which is a no ownership of knowledge understanding, that kind of before understanding, or that understanding which is a balance of time and space and knowledge, not so much a personal balance, all of those aspects, those all, you know, they're the breathing or the breath of space. That works for me anyway. And Ron writes, when you tune into space, you can sense the tension of holding to a position. Right, the conflict may show up very clearly. Or not the conflict, the contrast is a better way to say that. So we're not usually in touch in our ordinary positioned ways, because the positioning itself is tense. We're not usually in touch with the deep tranquility of space. So that's exactly the contrast that we're exploring, that you can explore in a walking around way. So Brigitte comments on container. I didn't mean to insult your container, Brigitte. So a container lets a form, okay, I meant more something that contains a kind of ground, a holding. Yeah, okay, so these are, you know, another set of words that's interesting to play with. And I, you know, I reacted to container because in T.S.K. Rinpoche does say space is not really like a container. He says space accommodates, and I think that's closer to what Brigitte says here. It's a kind of a ground, a kind of a holding. Space accommodates, space allows, and when you use that kind of language, and this is a great example of how words are important. When you use the language of accommodating or allowing, benevolence makes a lot more sense. In its great benevolence, space allows all form to appear. That's the way Rinpoche sometimes writes about things. Right. Okay, well, let's stop there, and please do be sure to read the orientation, because that's going to contain the practice for the week. I want to work with some of the language or a couple of passages in Love of Knowledge. The reading mentions as a practice doing TSK exercise 7, which is the body-mind-thought interplay, and that's a great exercise. By all means, do it if you can. But I'm going to suggest something a little different, so take a look. And Michael has one more comment, which I will mention. I'm Michael's comment will be the last one I mention. He says, in relationship, the cohesion is not contained. Okay, I'm going to leave people to think about that. The difference between containing and accommodating and allowing, that's what we're exploring here. Great. Thank you very much.